get that figure, the Heating Plant Corporation payment, that would be included as a major portion of this.
All right.
Okay, are there further questions on page 69?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Scott.
Yeah, he stated that the order for the bush areas are at times, how much overriding veto power do you carry over bush area requests?
Pat, Dr. LaRue.
Perhaps I can answer that question. Merely a processing center for those units that need assistance in purchasing. The only override that would occur would be if the unit is requesting something that's not in its budget and the fiscal office picks it up, they'll not approve it. Sure that they follow state practices in purchasing.
One more matter here, number 31, object code transfers, contractual at 471.1. What is that?
Again, Dr. Gore is probably going to have to speak to this one, Mr. Chairman. That's just a change from between column 13 and column 6, and I would guess that when Fairbanks did their original budget last December, they had it in the wrong category, and they discovered that they need to transfer between those two categories. I don't have any other explanation at this point.
I'd have to verify that, Dave, again.
I think I mentioned the committee yesterday, since the university did the zero-based process completely separate from the regular budget, there were some problems in moving from column 13 to column 6. Okay. And this is one of those instances where I think that problem's evident.
Okay.
I did have one question, Mr. Chairman.
Dave?
In program receipts, Dr. Cutler, is that the area in the physical plant, mainly the day of conference, that you charge to the other departments of the university for services rendered? Charging them for work performed by the physical plant staff.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, sir.
If I recall correctly, you were having approximately a $200,000 shortfall in that area this year in terms of anticipated chargebacks from those departments. Is that built into the 79 budget as well? Or has it been reduced out, maybe it's what you say?
That issue was brought up, Dave, if I may respond on behalf of Dr. Cutler on this. It was brought up in a recent budget session, and Bell Froh spoke to this point, and that has been incorporated in here to overcome that kind of a problem.
I'm not sure what you said. You're saying you have the 70, the column 6 and 7 assumes a takes into account the fact that fiscal 78 was $200,000.
That was his indication relative to the fiscal year 79 budget, yes.
You're confident these figures in 79?
I am as confident as I can be without equivocating too much about that.
I would like, David, I don't want to belabor it now, but I'd like to have some kind of explanation for that object code transfer, whatever it is. I could have starved by. All right. Maybe we can chase that around after we get out. I'll work with all right. Where that would appear to end with Fairbanks.
The only other item, we have two other items that would affect the Fairbanks campus, Mr. Chairman.
Auxiliary
services on page 233. Fairbanks is a portion of that budget, a major portion. The other one would be the student loan program. Page 223.
223?
Yes. There are general funds in that program. There's no increase requested in general funds.
Okay, and any questions about, I can't tell, does that say federal receipts? I don't know if that is, or is it general funds?
Federal receipts.
Federal receipts, right.
This is the only student loan program that I'm aware of that has general fund support in this, Chairman. I'm not sure of the necessity for the general fund support.
What's that doing in the You, are you with us up there?
Yes.
We're on page 223 of the short film.
This component has had general fund support for several years, but I don't know if it's a requirement of a special grant or it's just been built that way over the years.
The only response I wanted to make to Dave's earlier statement was that there is $5,300 for Juneau campus, where there is a general fund support. But those are the only two places. Anchorage does not have any general fund support.
That $5,000 is the total student loan program at Juneau. In this case, that's a minor portion of the total program. Even though it's a heck of a lot more dollars.
Well, $75,000 in general fund here, what's it for? What's the $75,000? 74.7.
I'll have to report that, Dave, or work that out.
Okay. Okay.
Was this the National Defense Student Loan Program at one time? Was it?
Yeah. Okay, we might check that one out and see. That might be
a matching requirement. I don't know.
Yeah, matching requirement. It might be shuffle
your I hate to guess, Mr. Chairman, but part of that could be in your work experience program that comes in on a matching basis of general funds. But again, without knowing specific, I want to check on it, so I'm giving you accurate information.
Okay. Incidentally, I would. $5,000 pops up here in the Juneau.
That's the total program, did you?
No.
Oh, is it? That's the only part of the program reported that, which excuse me.
All right. All right, page 233 is auxiliary service operations.
This would include the items that the university in their earlier presentations identified as fund 2. This is the receipts and expenditures from the bookstore.
Is this program receipts?
This program receipts, yes.
Match up.
This is program receipts.
Oh, all right.
It's the bookstore receipts, the auxiliary services, the food service programs, student housing.
All right.
All those programs. The question here was whether they're self-supporting or not. Under Regis policy, they're supposed to be.
Okay. That would be page 233, Bill.
In the workbook, yeah. How about in the workbook?
232. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't put those in the workbook. I stopped
it.
Okay. All right.
That would appear to be it, clear banks. That's not meant as nominal. An ominous way. All right, are there further questions now on the Fairbanks campus program? That would not include the PVCC, which we'll get to later. All right, if not, I'd like to thank you, Dr. Cutler.
Thank you. Do you care to move to research?
Well, I thought that since Larry Sweet was here, that perhaps he could take care of it, but if you have some things to discuss, we'd certainly like for you.
I just want to discuss the whole item if you wish, but it depends upon your pleasure.
Please do. I may have.
All right.
May not be.
Within the research area, we have a less than maintenance budget for research this time. It's. Research did not get an increase. As the other areas, we discussed this before when I was here. The total amount is, in terms of the step increases that are usually included, and we had ships, as you remember, in overhead, and so they show up as program receipts rather than overhead. And I think those are the only complicated things this time that come from the program. I would like to take the opportunity to point out to you the difference between research placed in the university and research contracts placed elsewhere. When you place a research contract with the university, you have an immediate tie-in between research and instruction. What is learned from that research? It comes back to immediately a faculty member who is connected with an instructional faculty role and gets in then to the intellectual stream, be it through textbooks, be it through graduate seminars, and becomes part of the instructional process. If it gets in two ways, through the instructor's knowledge and working through his publications, and through the education of graduate students who work on that project. If you give a research project to another agency, not a university, then you give it to one that has no connection, or necessarily no direct connection, into the intellectual stream where that increased knowledge from that research is shared and disseminated. That's why I want to point out why it is so important to that the research much be done through universities, because there is a double advantage in this relationship between the new research information being fed in to the instructional stream, so the next generation of students has the new knowledge. So whenever the state places a research contract outside the university, it loses that rather natural connection of social benefit. Thank you for allowing me that sermon.
I've got a question on this. Since we go back to organized research, it's on page 20, starts on page 21 of the short form. We had some conversations about the overhead earlier this year, and I'd like to, in answer to a question, the answer was that there were that the overhead receipts were to be kept by the research institutes this year rather than to be paid back out to the university for services. That would take the place essentially of further general funding in this particular year. What, you want to explain that a little better? Is that actually what's happening in this budget?
Mr. Chairman, if I recall, the statement I made at the last hearing was that organized research in the next year budget and from next year budget on would keep 100% of the indirect cost recovery revenue. They will pay the Fairbanks campus for the services rendered by the Fairbanks campus, such as physical plant or services provided to the libraries and the academic support area. However, they will not be charged for the services rendered by the statewide administration, either through the accounting services, computer services, or general statewide administration. That amount is $387,000, to be exact, in the current year operation. So they would be receiving the $387,000 in indirect cost recovery, which they, in the past, they had to pay to the statewide administration. And in a sense, they are receiving that as an increase in the budget. But at the same time, the state administration under the leadership of Dr. Humphrey had indicated that we will establish a certain base for the organized research. And the base for the organized research this year is $7,427,000, and that represents the 78th base level. Now, what the idea was that we will have a certain amount of dollars allocated or requested for the research. Then we'll have a spending pattern between the general fund and non-general fund. And we'll prepare the state organized research budgets on that basis in the future, rather than on the basis of the salary increase and inflation and other factors. That was the idea how it started.
Okay, it appears that there was no money allocated for salary increases in the research components. What's the reason for that?
I think the rationale at that time, and Dr. Brewer, you can add to the statement I would make, that we will establish a certain base for the organized research as general fund support from the state to carry out the research activities on the campus of Fairbanks. And that support would be $7,427,000. That represents, whether we include the Naval Arctic Research Lab or not, would represent a certain percentage as to how much the restricted funds are brought by the organized research. And so they are to carry out, and this is a certain level of support that the state provides. Now that level of support can go for the merit salary increases, it can go for inflation, it can go for the time when research people are not getting the grant and they have to be supported by the general fund.
So well, I see. In other words, that your approach was to just establish a general fund level of support and sort of lob it over there and they could do whatever they wanted to with it, more or less, or however they needed it. Is that what you're saying?
That's what really, and then they'll present the financial plan and the administration will review how the funds are being expended.
Okay. Well, in terms of real dollars, then, are we talking about 7.887 million? That would be the 7.5 million plus 387. Global. Is that what we're talking about?
No, the 387 was included in the 747.
So you're really not getting any more than. Oh, I see. All right. All right. Larry, what's the result of this, all of this? How do you see it? I don't know this, about protocol and all this stuff here, but we just looking for it.
Dr. Humphrey suggested this plan just before the Board of Regents meeting in December, and we made the transfers accounting fashion and how we showed the overhead recovery. That is, rather than paying it over to Fairbanks campus, showing it as overhead recoveries, that portion that went to Fairbanks campus was then shown in their budget as program receipts. In the research budget, we showed it as services to be paid out, because if the percentages that are used now are correct, then it's a straight warrant. It's just a matter of showing it in a different accounting sense. Then, subsequently, and maybe it was Dr. Humphrey's original idea, but a few weeks later that they brought up the part that went to statewide could be kept by research. So that did then end up being a net gain for research. I don't think that we fully understood what his plan was there, and I certainly didn't think that I understood why, if they were still going to give the services to us, why they didn't want to charge for it. But generally, it's just a matter of accounting different, but then there is that gain. Now, it turns out that that gain is just about equal to the amount of the step increments. So I thought that maybe his original plan was that was how that would be compensated for.
Okay. Yeah. As you go through the research budget, you'll find that in each case, the program receipts have been increased to a large extent between 78 and 79. However, the expenditures increased in the contractual area, which is what Larry's talking about, has not been increased in personal services to provide for salary increase. So the research budgets have used up all that money. So there's none left for salary increases, as Elshick was speaking to. It's already been committed back out in contractual payments back to the other units. So if under what Elshick and Dr. Brewer are saying, the budget should be adjusted to move that money from contractual up to personal services, I gather.
Elshick?
I think I indicated earlier that it would be up to research to put that money where they need it as a general fund support. And one thing I do want to add to the last statement I made, when this idea was proposed, there was a indication from the research that the $7,427,000 is really not going to be sufficient to carry out what they need. And later on, I believe $150,000 was added to it as an increased workload to help support the organized research. So the new figures, as you show on your short form page 21, for general fund and general fund match, do include the figure that I indicated earlier, $7,427,000 plus an additional $150,000.
That's shown in column
column 6 and 7.
Dave, on the 300, I think it was $387,000 in overhead that you plowed back to organized research from statewide. Your absolute intent is not to bill organized research for those funds during the fiscal year 79?
I believe that was the intent of the administration, and that's how it was passed.
Won't that, in discussions with the auditor, I thought that if those services were rendered and you didn't bill for them, that you wouldn't be able to include them on your overhead rate for the following year, because they were not an expense to the research grant. Would you then lose that overhead in fiscal 80?
Dave, I have discussed that with the federal auditors when they were in at an earlier time, and I believe I responded that they understood what was going to be attempted at that juncture in discussion and found no problem. They are coming back on the campus on April 17th, and I want to verify that again with them, Dave.
Well, no problem. They mean that they assume you're not going to bill them for it.
No.
Overhead rate.
They know that we would have to, in a form, bill in order to claim it.
In a form, bill in order to claim.
Well, okay, let's state it another way. Normally you would bill and you'd state it as such,
right,
as an overhead charge. In this case, they indicated in my first go-around with them that as long as they know the figures involved, I think I made the statement that they would not be did not intend to make an issue out of whether you transferred those over. If you could show the costs, in fact, that are involved, that's acceptable to them. What you do with that after you've got it, so to speak, is sort of the business of the institution. So we could bill, take it in, and then give it back to them in a sense. And so I intend to, again, reinforce this with the federal auditors when they hit the campus to make sure we're all in sync on it.
I'd sure like to find out, because I can see if this thing doesn't work, that you would need some elasticity here. You might want to put in whatever that actual amount is in general funds, or with the intent that with appropriate intent, exactly.
I'd be happy to, I want to review that with them again. I'd be happy to reduce it to writing and send it up to the committee just to reinforce the situation.
Okay. We have in the past, or at least we did certainly last year, we did make a general appropriation to the research institutes. They were all allocations so that money could be transferred back and forth without the permission of the budget audit committee. Bit of irony there, but do the research institutes feel comfortable with that kind of arrangement? Dr. Keller?
Well, I'm not sure that we knew we had the authority to move it back and forth around according to the way the rules come along. Now, maybe we do. Maybe Earl better speak to this.
Let me perhaps help, taking it from the point, Mr. Chairman, that you have made. And my checks were, in prior time, they took research as a total BRU, and any transfers in there were essentially not a problem. Now they look on the 16 research institutes as separate entities for transfer purposes, and they want those cleared through the governor's office, albeit that their allocations are here indicated.
Well, yeah, but you don't need to come to budget and audit that kind of stuff.
No, that would be through the governor's office in that case.
You just
singularly
tell them what you've done so that they can keep up.
Yes,
that's
what it's talking about. Well, it means that it goes through our campus to statewide administration, to the Board of Regents, to the governor's office.
Well, that's far enough.
Yes, it is.
Larry, how does the directors of the institutes feel about that? Are they comfortable with that kind of arrangement where although we do have numbers for each institute, it comes in under the allocation column, which under the Executive Budget Act means that money can be transferred from one institute to another depending on the need, without the necessity of having to get the governor's approval and the budget audit committee's approval.
comfortable with that. I think the mechanics of it this year have been fairly complicated, though, as if in fact wasn't that way, as if in fact they were separate line items, each without the flexibility. But
they weren't.
The one appropriation to the BRU or as allocations is no problem. And in fact, it's preferable.
I would suspect that the Executive Budget Act requirements are a lot tighter than what the practice was in previous years, but at least you don't have to include additional rigmarole in the budget.
Mr. Chairman, there is one requirement of the Executive Budget Act that this does affect research adversely, and maybe Dr. Cutler can speak to that. That is a requirement that all funds lapse at the end of the fiscal year. I think that does have an effect on the research program.
It's just going to have a profound effect in terms of the way we've been operating in the past.
Well,
it's going to cut down the type of flexibility within the whole research BRU. As, instead of the whole unit being allowed to operate within the aim of a balanced budget in total, now each institute must do that, and that's extremely difficult.
Let me see if I understand that. What he's saying is that some institutes operate on a current year basis at a deficit. And they have, for several, for numerous years, different institutes have normally been a deficit on normally. In numerous years in the past 10, let's say, there's been a deficit position in various institutes within the budget. And the university has been carrying the money over on its books until such time as there's a surplus that might mount those deficits. And I think that's the concern. It's a bookkeeping problem that's apart from the budget process. Deficit that's carried on their balance sheets. I think what they're concerned about is you have to close the books every fiscal year as you're doing with the Executive Budget Act. There will be deficits occurring in various institutes. Is that correct, Larry?
Yeah, but I think the logical question is, how does this happen? And I think that's the most important point. The research institutes operate with 80% restricted funding, and funding patterns go up and down, and you can't plan out to the very last dollar how you're going to make a particular year. So, no fault of planning or management, a particular unit can have a shortfall in a year. They have to live with that shortfall and try and plan for it the next year. Some other unit came out of it plus, it balances out. The theory is, as long as the whole research BRU balances out, you haven't got a bad situation. If the research BRU deficit, that's an entirely different matter. It's a matter of where you summarize it. But the problem is, if you force the units, if you have a lapse of funds at the end of the year, then every unit will keep very close track of their expenditures. And if there's any money left over, the positive ones will try and spend it out. If you have animal quarters, you buy feed rather than lose the funds. So you don't have the positive carry forward in the one to offset inevitable shortfall in another. That's the fundamental problem.
Well, we might be able to take care of that just by, you could put a clause in the act itself allowing the institutes not to lapse that money, so long as there's some kind of report on it.
There should be a process, Mr. Chairman, where we could reappropriate those balances so they wouldn't be terminated and placed into the general fund, because they are restricted receipts. There should be a reappropriation process that would fit the problem universally. I can pursue that with the commissioner before we close the budget.
Oh, okay. In other words, you could put it
so the funds wouldn't lapse into the general fund of the state. It could be automatically reappropriated upon the proper presentation through the budget process. I can review that with the commissioner. On your floor?
You think budget audit isn't set up to do this?
We would do the RP process.
Well, but
the reappropriation process. I'll check that.
If there's authority in the budget act, you could.
Well, okay. Let's see if we can address this problem. Larry, maybe Dr. Cutler and Larry, Earl, you know, maybe you can get together and see if we can't figure out some language here that can take care of that problem. I'd like to do it. Have it contained in the Budget Act itself. Want to set up any kind of barriers here on.
Thank you, sir. That's very encouraging.
I don't know if this would be the case, but there could well be decisions at some point or other within the institutes to add certain funds, and particularly some things that might be priorities of the legislature, because there's, I would anticipate anyway, all of these appropriations would come under the allocation column for the same reasons that it was done last year. I take it there's been a problem taking care of legislative intent for those special problems. If we put in $50,000 for a project, you're going to do it, aren't you?
No problem.
It becomes like any other restricted fund project. Exactly the same way. The grants and contracts office as a restricted fund project.
I talk about stuff like, you know, in the base, perpetual clam toxin stain and all that kind of stuff, which may.
Yes, sir. I want to see some action in that.
Yeah. Okay.
I think some of them in the budget.
Okay, there are a couple of items in organized research perhaps we ought to cover.
Page 29, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
There's an increase in general fund request for the agricultural equipment station.
Are we going to argue with that, Leo?
No argument.
Leo, you claim you want this?
No.
Next one's on page 39.
Yes, there's no argument. Actually, we have, in fact, gone over these things before.
Yes, we have.
So, not like
it isn't anything.
I don't feel slighted at all. Thank you.
The other one's on page 39, Mr. Chairman.
There is a position that's requested by a climatologist for the ADIDC program in Anchorage. Does anybody know about that?
Yes. The increase in the public service workload of the Alaska State Climatologist function assumed by AEIDC in 72. In actual fact, this workload has never been compensated properly and budgeted at 2 man months when assumed from a full-time federal position. The full-year demand has always had to be bootlegged from some other programs or part of AEIDC deficit. This function needs to be budgeted at the bare minimum of 9 months for the state climatologist on general fund and 3 months on contract research. In addition, the general fund should carry 3 months of research assistant time for the preparation of the material. That's the basis of our request of this need to fulfill this public service that's being rendered, sir. We'd like to be honest about it.
Ms. Buckle.
Is this the same meteorologist that does aviation weather? Sometimes or some the same thing?
I don't think it's part of their program.
Do you do any aviation weather?
No.
The difference is between climatologist and meteorologist.
Somebody isn't one of more far sighted.
When the longer view of things. What's the difference between a climatologist and a meteorologist?
Well, I would guess in shorthand, it's the difference between climate and weather.
Forecast?
we're not subtle.
Well. Okay. Meteorology would be the science of forecast of weather activities. Climatologist would be a description of what past temperatures
historical
rainfall and all that had been in the area.
be together.
I can't remember the name of that almanac that I used to see on my grandfather's wall, but that's probably
Poor Richard. Poor Richard.
Right.
Okay. Was there a third item there, Dave?
No, sir. The rest of them are either funded from federal funds or grant funds.
All right. Okay. Are there now, are there questions by the members of the committee?
Dr. Hadler's presentation, Mr. Chairman, he gave me, left me with the impression that people under organized research, because they are attached to the university, are performing functions as professors and lecturers in the system. And I notice on page 21 of the short form, we have quite a number of positions there, about 800 positions. What I'd like to know is what percentage of that number, how many of those people are really actually teaching in the system?
Mm-hmm. President Buchholz, about 90% of our research faculty would be involved in the teaching assignment within a 3-year period. At any one time, I would guess about 30% would be involved. But over a 3-year period, about 90% would have had a teaching assignment.
They rotate then, you see?
Yes, they don't teach all the time. You see, they'd be on research sometime. And then come a semester or a term, they would be teaching a course or two courses. Then the next term, they may not be teaching any. But they would be teaching their specialty.
Are those numbers broken out in that way? In other words, if you've got a guy that spends half his time in research and half his time in teaching, are they broken out half and half here like they have been in the past?
Yeah. They'd have to be in the proper category, as it were, either are they being research or instruction or wherever. So they are pro rata.
For example, a geophysicist would be hired by the College of Arts and Science Physics Department to teach a course in physics. And he would be paid out of the instructional budget for that portion of his time that was spent on instruction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay. I'd like to make one distinction. If it's a researcher who's working in organized research, as opposed to what they split, he's doing research in faculty. If it's a faculty member doing individual research, his total budget would show up in instruction. It doesn't show up in research.
Thank you.
The individual research would be part of the instructional budget. Organized research would be split.
So what happens to the money, the general fund money that we put in faculty research, and does that get transferred over?
No, that stays in instruction.
That stays in instruction.
The instructional process is their individual research. That's part of their contract. So it's all carried in the instruction budget. The research portion in this budget is strictly the organized institute research, and the individual faculty research is not broken out separately.
It used to be broken out. I think
they tried it once or twice. It didn't work very well.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, does that amount to double appropriation or allocation of funding?
No. No, because they carry half. In other words, if a guy spends half his time researching and half his time teaching, then they just put half the money in one and half in the other.
Mr. Chairman, what I was thinking was that if there were a certain amount of funding allocated for personal services, and then a certain amount of funding is allocated for research, actual research work, then this person goes into teaching for a brief while. He gets paid from the personal services category, but then there is still some money in the research category.
They're supposed to know, I guess, as we write the budget, they're supposed to know roughly how many, who's going to do what for the coming fiscal year. I guess that's, sometimes they're not accurate. I guess.
I'd like to try out that, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Please do.
80% of the research is funded by non-state monies.
Non-state monies.
And when we start a year, we say we think we're going to get maybe $5 million of research from the federal government or from other, some other thing besides the state government. Now we may not, but that's what we estimate. And we start out with a budget with an estimate, our best estimate we can of what the research income will be. So you see, when our budget starts, it is now not all fixed state income over here from which the researchers are paid. So when the researcher comes to work for us in instruction, he will not be paid in the research bit, which may be out of a project which he that had been a federal project. He's not working on a federal project, he is now working in instruction. So the funds are not all fixed and totaled at the beginning of the year, so that there'd be double funding for the whole research group over here. There is estimated funding for that research person. Does that help? Or do I want to confuse?
Yeah, it did help.
Thank you.
All right. I'd like, are there other persons, Larry, would you, do you have anything to add here? Or there are some kind of details we need to take care of maybe before. Do you have anything to add to this presentation?
I can't think of anything.
Okay, if there's no further, Leah?
I asked Dr. Kupner if my good friend Earl Beislein is still head of School of Mines, or is it Earth Source Resources now, or whatever the title of it is.
It's the School of Mineral Industries, and this isn't for public, but this is very public. But Leo, I'm worried on that because, you know, Earl is a perennial, and he's a great and distinguished man. And the one of the things that the Engineering Committee on Professional Development said to me, what are you going to do about a dean? By the time they visit again, Earl will be at retirement age. And that will be then we will begin to worry. I'm beginning to worry right now because he's a tremendous asset. He's an institution in himself. I'm glad you inquired. Great man.
Dr. Cutler, I asked you yesterday how I would, if I could seek information on travel on individuals to the university, would that be furnished through Dr. Cutler's office or some other office?
Well, I suspect that Mr. Scott could request that information.
Okay, thank you.
I can speak to you at the meeting.
Dave, did you have a question? Okay, if there's nothing further, then I'd like to thank Dr. Cutler.
Thank the committee for their attention.
Dr. Wolf, I'd like to take the stand. Okay, we'll start on page 73 here on Anchorage. Dr. Wolf might have some kind of an overall statement, you know, if you'd like. Otherwise, I think we'll just pitch right in because we have kind of gone over this before.
Why don't you just pitch right in?
All right.
Mr. Scott, general question, Mr. Chairman. The UAA campus has developed at least a draft of an academic master plan. One of the things I asked Dr. Wood this morning, if he could identify in all these positions he's asking for in the instructional budget, how many of them are there to expand programs based on the academic master plan, and how many were there because of actual increased enrollment estimates? If there's a difference between these two kinds of...
Actually, they all fit together, and the 12 new full-time faculty positions she listed here on page 73 tie in directly with the master plan. The master plan also notes enrollment growth and increased student credit hour production in these various disciplines. So it does all tie together.
If I understand, Dr. Wolf, you're saying that in each of these areas there's an enrollment growth sufficient for an additional faculty member.
Correct.
And in addition to that, each of these faculty areas are involved with the academic development plan in terms of expansion.
That is correct.
How are the student credit hours now, how do you count them these days? I know there's some fluff about it. How do you count them? Do you just pick the number of students that successfully complete a course and count those hours up, then how you get to it?
Well, we count on the basis of the number of students who enrolled for a course.
Who enrolled for?
Yes.
And if they drop out, do they still sort of stay in there?
Yes. See, a student can drop out anywhere along the line. A student might stay in the course until a week or two before the course ends. And once the course is underway, even though a few students drop, course instruction continues.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure the Chancellor understood your question, but credit hours are credit hours that are produced and awarded through the Director of Admissions and Records.
His question was on enrollment.
Well, we've got a number of requests based on increased enrollment, and I guess the question was, how do you count enrollment?
Mr. Chairman, the enrollment reports are primarily a reflection of credit hours, and we also use a designation of headcount. But headcount will reflect trends, but will not produce the number of credit hours that are needed to determine, for example, full-time equivalent students. And we've gone over this a number of times now with legislative budget and audit, and we're working with post-secondary commission to arrive at acceptable reporting procedures and definitions. I think we've reached that point. That was identified for you in this instructional activity report that was provided earlier.
Linda, you said enrollment, you'd count as an enrollment, actually enrolled in the course, whether they dropped out or not. But in terms of student credit hours, you do not count the people who dropped out in the first 3 weeks. There is a difference there, is that correct?
Correct.
An enrollment would be anybody who actually enrolled, and whether they ever attended the class or not. Is that basically correct?
No, we have some who might enroll and withdraw before the class begins because of the way we do our registration. Those who withdraw before the class began would not be counted.
Would not be. But once they started class, they would be counted for enrollment purposes, but not necessarily for student credit hour production. Depends on when they withdrew. And you also still continue to do the dual enrollment count. Also, if you're ACC, for example, you would count them as an enrollment in both ACC and UAA.
That's correct. But I think maybe the problem is that we're talking about two types of enrollment reports, an opening semester enrollment report versus a closing enrollment. The closing enrollment reflects the credit hours actually generated.
Well, I think that we ought to clarify what, when you come in and ask for new positions based on increased enrollment, what it is that we're talking about. How you figure increased enrollment, I guess that's the question.
Tim, you might want to...
What do? You just count heads or what?
Tim, you might want to speak to the, so you can define for the chairman what is meant by enrollment and the protection aspect of it for the purpose, so that he can get a handle on that.
Mr. Chairman, the data that we use to project the budget based on enrollment increases is actual credit hour count for 1976 and 77. The current fiscal year, we don't have closing enrollment reports for the current spring semester, so we can't give you actual figures or projected. So we're faced with using 3 years of data, one which is actual, two that are projected. It's based on actual, on credit hour increase, the only thing we're using.
Well, you've got a pretty good idea how many people you're going to have in this semester.
Yes, we do. We have an opening enrollment report that's been submitted to legislative audit.
Well, do you, in other words, you don't count them twice. One of them, the person that's taken classes at ACC and university too, you count them twice for these purposes?
We do in the head count. However, we count credit hours only at the place where they're generated. And
well, do you use the head count or the other thing?
For the budget purposes?
Yeah.
Only the credit hours.
So when you say your enrollment is increased, you're referring to the credit hours, right?
That's correct.
Not referring to head count at all. Is that right?
That's correct.
Tim, are you suggesting that the regents reviewed the credit hour increases when they made their allocations for positions?
No, and one of the reasons being that the first budget submittal for FY79 request occurred back in September, I believe, and at that point in time we did not even have open enrollment report for the fall.
So the regents didn't use school credit hours as a justification for the fact that I assume the campus is?
Yes. And those projections are identified on these charts in the back.
What projections are recommended? Whenever you prepare a budget ahead of time, you're going to have to use the projections for credit hours. There are about four different lines on this thing, but which one is used?
The one for the University of Alaska at Anchorage, what we tried to do is use a scientific approach in enrollment projection, just as you would do in population projection. And we developed an envelope using different techniques, and the line, the data that was actually used for our projections is the darker line. Now, our most recent information indicates that data is conservative. That are actually
my own projections.
That's correct. For example, for 1978, we would be estimating UAA credit hour production to be about 39,400. And we found that based on the fall enrollment, that is substantially low, that the UAA's enrollment has increased far and beyond that. So we're trying to come in and at least establish some credibility with you, not just reaching for pie-in-the-sky type figures, but to keep them conservative and something that we can justify to you.
You know, the request for new positions in this BRU are based on the projection, the final projection.
No. This budget was put together, what, 4 or 5 months ago, prior to the time those projections were made.
Where did we get the 19 positions? And we're still on page 73.
Mr. Green, is what we have is a budget proposal submitted from the campus level on using their assumptions of growth, which was done prior to the time the statewide office made its assumptions of growth. The statewide office assumptions were not part of the budget development at the campus level. What we're seeing before us is positions based on the campus's estimate growth. Is that basically correct? This one?
Okay. I guess my question is then, are the campus projections of growth reasonable in light of this enrollment study?
I don't know if anybody checked.
These,
Well, I've got this, revised instructional analysis, this whole, I'm just trying to find out whether the request for new positions, if anyone's looked at this study and see if the new position requested makes sense in light of the projections.
I think the direct answer was really on that is that statewide has come out with that document. The campus is sticking with their assumptions and have not attempted, at least in this instance here, to reconcile or check between the two. And they feel that their projections, they want to stay with them. That's the basic answer.
What are the differences between the projections? Somebody answer that?
Well, I'm sorry, but I have to take exception to that. The projections that were made system-wide, utilizing the same techniques, and the chancellors have all been asked to review this document and critique it, and if there's a difficulty with the projection, the chancellor should respond to it.
I think, Tim, the answer here is they have not checked that document nor critiqued it, is what I was attempting to say.
There's no major discrepancy on it, as far as I can tell.
So in light of the enrollment study done on a statewide basis, these new the position requests are reasonable?
Correct.
Can we have a statewide officer agree with that? That was the chancellor's comment. I didn't hear anything from statewide.
I'm in agreement with it, yes.
Nobody's in the lead. All right. Directing Dr. Wolf, directing your attention to the workbook, page 72A, and to page 73 in the short form, substantial increase in the estimate of federal receipts and research grants. And to the extent that I can read this at all, I don't understand that.
There's
I can't read it all.
UA receipts, Mr. Chairman, is an attempt to say that apparently those are not from federal sources, but they are restricted receipts. We divided restricted programs into two pieces, those that come from federal sources and those that come from other sources. And there seems to be a major increase in the estimate restricted program grants from other sources and federal both beyond the current year.
That amounts to $1,185. It looks like the other receipts are $656,000 and the federal receipts are $529. Where does that come from? What happened there? A of the workbook. It refers to a revised estimate in the receipt of restricted funding, both federal and non-federal sources. Near as I can figure it out, it looks like that there's one figure of $656,000 that would be non-federal.
That's the net increase, Mr. Chairman. That would be the net increase. What they would have is $1,185 increase in their estimate of non-federal receipts, our reduction is $529,000. It's a reduction, of federal and an increase in non-federal. For a net increase of $600,000+ in restricted funds.
Chairman, this is related to an estimate provided primarily by the College of Arts and Sciences based upon their projections of the non-general funds or restricted fund operations that they anticipate getting into next year. They were unable to specify the exact source of funds, whether it would be a state grant or a state contract or a federal grant or a private. It was their estimate of the type of the total amount of dollars that they would be utilizing next year in this type of activity.
I break up this party, but I've got almost a unanimous request that we should take a break for about 5 minutes, so we will do that. We'll have a recess.
Okay, they'll come around with feet, Bob.
Thanks, soon to take the top off your trough. What is the, does this translate, as near as I can tell, this translates out into personal services? $232,000, where is that going by?
Stan, talking about the increase in restricted accounts.
That would go into grants and contracts for personal services, perhaps to operate training programs, special training programs that are funded by the grant or contract. Most of it would be labor pool.
Okay. Yeah. Now, Stan, since you said that the school couldn't really identify this time the source of these funds, do you have a process within the university where you can restrict the expenditures of these funds until the income is actually identified?
Absolutely. It's exactly the way they would be handled. Each one of them would be handled as a separate account, and the funds would not be available for expenditure until there was a guarantee, a grant award, or signed contract, or something of that nature.
That would be a local. That would be a local control at your campus, I assume. Because I don't think they have that control at the statewide level.
But that would be a local control. Yes.
Okay, we've got to continue reading from the workbook, page 72A. Their labor pool in arts and sciences, education, nursing, engineering, business, and PA, whatever PA is. What are those, what are you referring to there?
That would be funds for part-time instructors.
And what's the basis for that?
It relates back to the increased credit hour production.
Is that done on a kind of a formula basis, or is it done on an individual sort of, how do you come to the conclusion that you need a new instructor? I guess I should have asked Howard that to be purchased. I didn't think of it. In other words, it occurs to me that if you have, as Howard, for instance, mentioned, there's a 12.5% increase in the number of math students, and if that's from 7 to 8, then that's one thing. But if it's from 700 to 800, then that's something else. How do you make that?
What we've normally done, Chairman, is that we would utilize funds out of the labor pool to employ part-time people. And then when we have enough production there, where we would utilize, would have the need for the services of someone on a full-time continuing basis, then we would ask for a full-time position. For example, if we were starting up getting started in a program in math, chemistry, what have you. We would normally, in the past, we have started these programs with the utilization of the services of part-time professors in those areas until we built up a cadre of students and the need for a continuous, continuing full-time person.
Dave, Dr. Wolf, last year in the fiscal 78 budget, the legislature included $175,000 to improve your full-time, part-time teaching ratio at the campus. Here you're asking for $150,000 in additional part-time staffing. Can you describe how that would affect the ratio that you brought to the attention of the legislature last year and the need to improve full-time teaching ratio?
Well, the funds that we're requesting for FY79 would continue us in approximately the same ratio we're in now, which is approximately 65 to 70% of courses being taught by full-time professors.
Is that the same ratio that was reported to the legislature last year?
No, it isn't. The figures were transposed, they were turned the other way around. It was indicated in the budget request document, I believe, that they wanted to improve the ratio from 33% part-time or full-time and 66% part-time, which is taught by part-time.
The point, Mr. Chairman, is that the legislature increased the Anchorage budget last year by $175,000 to improve the full-time teaching ratio from 33%, from a reported 33% to an approximate 50%. The university subsequently redid their figures and found out that they already had 65% full-time teaching instead of the 33 they had reported. And they went ahead and spent $175,000 anyway. And now they're asking for additional part-time staff. I'm just wondering how those two things seem to conflict in terms of their stated objective last year of improving their full-time teaching.
That's what they're trying to do, raise right around 50%.
Right. That may be true.
No, I'm sorry. Clark?
Well, what's the reaction to that? Is it
okay?
What was the ratio, true ratio last year of, I understand, full-time faculty to total faculty? Or it would be this, yeah, it was before the appropriation last year of 175,000.
Well, see, for several years running, we have been trying to improve the ratio, and about 4 years ago, if I recall correctly, the funding was such that the expectation from income from student revenues from tuition was pegged at about $711,000. This is for the Old Senior College. Then the year following, because we had to reduce our budget, and in order to generate as much of that income as we could, we had to utilize the services of part-timers, because we can get more student credit hours produced and we can get more income generated by the use of part-timers. But the program suffers, students suffer, the quality of the programs suffer when you utilize the high ratio of part-time faculty. So we have been moving in that direction. Auditors were there from the legislative budget audit, and I assume that that report that Mr. Ford had generated had been distributed to members of the legislature. Apparently, it was not.
Mr. Scott, I think the answer that Dr. Wolf was avoiding is that I wanted to bring the attention of the committee is that $175,000 was placed in the UAA budget this year to allow them to get the 50% full-time teaching staff.
Well, last year.
Well, fiscal 78. What they found out after they redid their statistics is that they were already at 65% full-time. But they went ahead and spent $175,000 anyway. A lot of that went to buy part-time faculty for a year.
They may have done that in anticipation of the supplemental. I don't know what's been done. What is the ratio now? What was it before the appropriation that was made last year to help?
Well, my recollection of the data that Mr. Ford had put together was that it had moved up a few percentage points, but I think it was about 72%. I wouldn't vouch for that, so, because it's been a long time. I don't
recall what was claimed. I know that I supported it because I thought the ratio should be increased, but it's so the effect of the legislative appropriation was to increase it from 60 something to 72, the ratio of full time to total faculty in this senior college.
That, yes, and by comparison, if you want something to compare it with, about the only thing that I know to compare it with is I believe 3 years ago the ratio for Fairbanks was 91% of the classes taught by full-time faculty and 9% part-time. That's the only thing that I can recall offhand that you might compare it with.
But, Chairman, isn't there a fundamental difference in, or is there, in the type of instruction that goes on rather than, you know, between Fairbanks and Anchorage, isn't there some kind of, isn't there a pretty fundamental difference in that? Maybe I'm thinking about that.
Maybe there shouldn't be. Maybe there is.
I suppose the fundamental differences that I would see would center around, number one, the type of student attracted to each place, because in Fairbanks, you're getting more recent high school graduates. They have dormitories there to live in, et cetera. It attracts a student. Now, in Anchorage, we have more students who are, say, mid-career and who are already off and going at something. The average age is 32. So, the program has evolved out of an evening school operation. In other words, when I first went to Anchorage in 1972, the senior college at that time had no classrooms. We had not one classroom to assign for use. So all the classes had to be offered in the public school buildings after hours for the public schools. In the spring semester of 1973 was the first time we had any classroom space at all. That was a part of the current library building. It was never intended for classroom use, but we used it for part of that as we evolved. And then we began to offer classes in the daytime, but we have not abandoned our evening student clientele and have no intention of doing so, although we are building into a regular four-year program.
Do you think it's necessarily a bad thing? Here again, I don't have any preconceived notions, but do you think part-time instructors from the, say, the business community or the professional community in Anchorage is necessarily a bad thing, rather than having full-time or academic folks with, no put-down intended, but it just occurs, the courses that I had from people who were out, say practicing law and who came in were some of the most enlightening courses that I had, as distinguished from some of the courses that I had full-time professors. And I just wondered if it's necessarily a bad thing, since you do have an awful lot more people to draw from in Anchorage than you would say in Fairbanks.
Well, it's certainly a good thing to supplement and to augment the regular program by utilizing the services of part-timers. But if you're going to try to build a whole program on the basis of having part-time instructors, it isn't going to fly very well, because our experience has been, and we have an awful lot of experience in this, is that we get about what we pay for. And we're paying those people roughly $1,500 for teaching a three-credit course. And they come and teach their course, they pack up, and they're gone. Students rarely ever see them in between.
Mr. Chairman?
But, yes.
I'd like to take exception to Mr. Scott's comment that the $175,000 was not used for new full-time positions. In effect, it was, because we added new faculty members, full-time faculty members, in a total dollar amount that exceeds the $175,000. I don't know exactly how many positions because I don't recall, but I do know the total dollar amount was in excess of $175,000. I think the reason that this is not being reflected more significantly in the full-time, part-time ratio is because there was also a lot of money spent on part-time instructors at the same time.
I don't think that was my comment, Stan. What I was saying was that the intent behind the appropriation last year was to increase the ratio from 33% to 50%. When the university found out that it was already at 65%, it still used the money regardless of that intent.
Then I'll
go ahead and buy additional faculty.
Well, I think though that the answer was that the money was used to further increase the amount of full-time faculty. Is that correct?
Yes.
Well, I would regard that as being in substantial compliance with legislative intent.
I've long since forgotten the figures anyway. I remember the purpose of the appropriation. But what, in terms of these new requested positions, what effect does that have now on the ratio? The 12 faculty positions, I understand, are part of these 19. What does that do to the percentage?
Well, part of what it will do depends on what we have in the way of funding for the labor pool. But with an increase in the labor pool coming along also, it probably will not change it very much. It could have the effect of changing it some, but if particularly if we have funds and use in such a way we call the self-support program, so that when we have a group come to us who want a particular kind of course for a particular purpose, and we employ an instructor to teach that course, and they pay the full bill on it, in other words, all of the instructional costs are paid for, then that's just one more taught by a part-timer.
The labor pool includes the part-time instructors?
Yes.
So you're saying this probably won't have an effect on the ratio?
My guess is that it would not affect it very significantly in terms of percentage.
I think there's something to what Steve was saying in terms of some courses, but I see the other side in terms of continuing student interaction with professor in the course. Are you satisfied now with the present ratio? Is there something that you think we should approach what Fairbanks has for policy reasons other than just keep up with the Joneses? I mean, is there a good reason to up this now, or is this satisfactory in terms of the present program?
No, there are good reasons to have the major portion of all the courses and virtually all the programs taught by full-time faculty members. I think if Chancellor Cutler was still here and you would ask him if he'd like to cut back and enlarge his percentage of courses taught by part-timers, I suspect we'd get a no. There are a few administrative advantages to have part-timers. They're easy to get rid of. Need to lay off or cut back or something like that, but it's
in my experience that the students very often like those part-time instructors because of the experience level of practical experience that they bring into the classrooms. I know that Boyd Hotner and Jeff Cook, for instance, taught at the Fairbanks campus, and people taught off from on. I don't know whether they're still out there or not. Anyway.
Well, we have some very excellent. I don't want to leave the impression that we have not had some very fine experiences with part-time professors. We have. Some of them are excellent. Some of them devote a great deal of time and attention to this effort. Some of them don't. Many of them don't.
I have a question, maybe directed to Dave. Is 1.3 million, is that included anywhere in here?
Not in the short form at all. I think if they come to the appropriate components, so it was a bigger decision. That would be added in the short form.
Magazine?
Yes. Speaking to
this is 1 billion in here.
Would not be in the structure. No. It would be student services and administration. Okay.
How about their the positions 9 through 17 are all at least 9 through 16 are all faculty positions requested, and looks like number 12 might be as many as two.
That's the secretary?
No, number 12, faculty, looks like counselors, educational psychology or something like that.
Oh, you're looking at the workbook.
The workbook, yeah. What are these guys? They're the ones that lead these people. Which one are you looking at? Are these guys?
They're there. So I'm trying to make sure which list you're looking at.
Okay, what is the justification for the request on the, if you refer to the workbook, page 72A, positions 9 through 16, what is the justification?
Program growth and development, increased enrollment.
Is that, without going into each individual one, is there some backup for that that we have, or that we can explore? All right, well look, here's number 9, faculty math. What's the increase in enrollment in your math program? What?
I don't have a PAN specific. Do you have this material?
Mr. Chairman, that was the information that was Dave Scott had given to the members of the committee at the last hearing date.
Oh, the increased workload?
Increased workload.
Does that have the numbers of students, credit hours and things like that, increase the actual numbers?
In certain instances, Mr. Chairman, they do. It said in this case to serve approximately 75 to 100 students in the math requirements. And it's to teach 3 classes per semester, provide student advising service on school committees, and work with the adjunct faculty. So it does have some information, but it's not as detailed as or as to the credit hours at every instance.
Is that 75 new students?
Yes. Well, there'd be 75 to 100 additional students who would have math requirements as part of their degree requirements.
Oh, okay. How many math instructors do you have right now?
2.
Just 2 in the entire university?
Is that right, Steve?
That's correct. There are 2.
Okay, that's upper division.
No, that's no. 4. That's lower and upper division at University of Alaska Anchorage, Mr. Cooper.
In addition, there's 4 division teachers at ACC.
Well, yeah, okay. Yeah, but I'm talking about this particular position. Would it be upper division?
It would be all 4 years. Are in the School of Business and Public Administration, we have experienced very substantial growth in terms of programs and students. Tremendous interest in and demand for courses in accounting in particular. Say one other thing about the growth and development in the School of Business. The University of Alaska Anchorage will, in the next 10, 12 months, be undertaking a self-study review for renewal of its accreditation by the Northwest Association. In addition to that, some specialty areas will also be seeking accreditation in their own areas. School of Business will be one, and Business Administration and Public Administration. Another, for example, is nursing. We're seeking accreditation in nursing now, and then social work.
Is there some relationship with accreditation for these accounting positions?
Yes. The I believe Dr. Cutler just pointed out that a minimum of 40% of the classes in those areas had to be taught by people who had terminal preparation, PhD, in the specific area.
Who is that?
At the present time, we only have one faculty member in accounting who has the PhD.
Okay, well, does this get you accreditation, or is it a step toward it, or does it continue it, or how does it?
Well, it's a step toward it. It's a part of it. There are a lot of things that are involved in it, and this is one.
Do you offer a degree in accounting at this?
Yes, we offer the Bachelor of Business Administration with a major in accounting.
Oh, Ms. Buckle.
Question.
Yes.
Maybe you can go over this again. You said you are seeking accreditation for School of Business and School of Business Administration and Nursing, and what was the other one?
Social work.
Social work.
Social work education, yes.
What schools are accredited now with the university, not just in Anchorage, but also in Fairbanks? Maybe I'm not sure what. Could you give me the ones in Anchorage that are accredited?
That have specialty accreditation?
Mm-hmm.
At this time, only the School of Education, I believe, is under the approved, the teacher certification program is now under what is known as the approved program approach, and the teacher education program there has been approved by the State Department of Education, which is roughly the equivalent of specialty accreditation.
That's in Anchorage?
Yes.
In Fairbanks, how many schools do we have accredited?
I'm not sure. Their engineering programs, certain of those I know are accredited by the Society for Professional, whatever it is. Their teacher education program is approved.
Business?
No.
It's being reviewed.
It's not approved. It's not
approved. It's not approved. It's ours is further ahead. I think we're further ahead than they are in that regard.
This is not.
Do you go over this every so often to get accredited? Do you have to go through a certain cycle and then they come in and check you out?
Yes.
Okay. I've got, Mr. Scott, I think, had an inquiry, but I want to ask you something before that. But I'd like to. Number five, Bureau of Management and Urban Affairs. What is that? I see it's $48,800 that comes from U of A fees. Could you elaborate on that a bit?
Mm-hmm. About 3 or 4 years ago, I believe it was, the School of Business applied for. In conjunction with what was in the borough and the city for an urban observatory grant. The federal funding had been available for 10 of these urban observatories in large cities, and they decided to select 10 medium-sized or smaller cities, and Anchorage was one of those which was selected. From that beginning, there has grown an increased interest and capability of performing research projects, gathering information and so on with regard to urban developments and this sort of thing. So the management development has grown out of that. They put on short courses, for example, for people in business and particularly real estate and this sort of thing. That's basically the nature of it.
It's self-sufficient then, is it? It says it comes off of U of A fees. I don't know what that means. It seems to me it's self-sufficient.
Yes.
Okay, is there anything further than in the instruction portion of this budget, page 73 or so?
We do have some existing funds.
Okay, if there are no further questions, I'd like to move on to page 77 in the short form, page 76 in the workbook. That would be support services centers. One thing I'd like to ask right away on that one, there's an entry in beside column 6 that says transfer faculty from business to criminal justice center. Is that the, I thought we just put a lot of money into business school last year, and now we're going to send them over to criminal justice or what?
Chairman, the criminal justice center had a permanent staff, has had for several years, and several of those were on grants or contracts which expired last year. And in order to keep those faculty members on, they were actually teaching faculty. They were placed in positions in the business school. And this is an attempt then to transfer these people back into the criminal justice center where they really should be carried rather than school business.
Okay, is there Let me see if I understand this. We put some money in last year for the business school, and we paid instead for the criminal justice center. Is that about what it boils down to?
Some of the courses that were being taught by the criminal justice center were in the area of the school of business. Rather than losing those faculty members and losing the capability to teach those courses, they were placed in positions that were funded in the school of business. The transfer is really to reflect them again in criminal justice center where we feel they more properly should be shown.
Yeah, me too. Okay. I suspect that somebody else
by moving the general funds for those two positions back to the criminal justice center, rather than putting them on criminal justice center restricted funds, move general funds out of the school of business, and we also have a request we just looked at for two more positions in the school of business in 79 in general funds.
Yeah, what about, how's that going to work?
What Mr. Scott related is exactly right. That is the result of it.
Well, now, there's an ongoing debate in the legislature about whether the Criminal Justice Center is performing enough of a service for the state to have it transfer over to the general funds. There was a decision made, I think knowledgeably so. I mean, legislature appeared to know what it was doing. They're related to that, and I guess some of the previous administrators apparently made a conscious decision to overturn the legislative decision along that line, and I guess that's exactly what happened.
Before it files, Mr. Chairman, could we ask the university to provide us a breakdown of the interface between the Criminal Justice Center and the Center for Alcoholic? Because both centers are included in the switch.
Is that in support services, both of you?
Yes, they're both included in this one.
Yeah, I'd like to request that if it can be done. I don't want one month.
I'll attend to that as soon as I get back to Bank Region. We'll send it to Mr. Scott.
Thank you very much. All right. Are there further questions on support services center? Thank you, Bart. Okay, if there are no further questions, let's move on to page 81 of the short form. Academic support services.
This is basically the library, media services, and the performing arts center. But